Welcome to the Book of Luke Skywalker. Sorry. The Book of Grogu. No. The Book of Ahsoka?
Raylan Marshall? The Book of Raylan Marshall?
The Book of Marshall Cobb Vanth. The officially unofficial podcast for all that Boba Fett stuff, and then his friends, too. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
What do you say about a show that doesn't feature the main character in more than one scene per episode?
And man, if you've ever worn, touched, or even looked at a Mandalorian's armor, you're a Mandalorian as far as this show is concerned.
Hell yeah. I got some chainmail in the closet. I could pull that out. I'll be a Mando for
a day.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I got a chainmail bikini from my Conan cosplay days. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure, I can have my little Grogu don it.
Uh-huh. Yuck. All right. Well, we watched season 1 episode 6, chapter 6 from the Desert Comes a Stranger. And again, at least Boba Fett was in this one.
It's true. It's true.
I feel like this is becoming the Book of Fennec Shand, though, because like she's the one pretty much running all these operations, right?
She is, yeah. Boba Fett is choosing to remain neutral again in his own show.
Yeah.
It is wild. I 2 weeks in a row... I don't know, because I like it. Like I really have liked the last 2 weeks of the show, and I enjoy the direction it's going. I just have so many questions about why it's structured this way.
Yeah. No, it's weird. That's the thing. Yeah, I'm not enjoying it. It's just I don't know. Like, this needs to be some kind of... Is it not Boba Fett focused? I mean, this season hasn't been Boba Fett focused. Apparently, half of it has been Mandalorian. I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't quite understand it either. And I wonder if it's just because every time I read about the Marvel machine, there's always this like. You know, the fact that these stunt sequences and these CGI things take so long to produce, and the tempo is so up tempo that a lot of times they will have like just action sequences that they haven't even justified in the plot yet fully.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you know, we're going to have this plane to plane collision, and they're going to fight on this scrap metal that's falling, and it's going to be some big three act moment, and we're going to ride our way there so that the CGI technicians can go ahead and start working on that. And then that, you know, once you lay that foundation, you're kind of stuck there. And it's like, if you can't quite lay clean tracks, well, you've got $25 million of CGI that says you got to. And I wonder if some of the stuff is like that. It's all kind of siloed up and it's like not quite fit together like a tailored suit. And if they had a little bit more time in pre-production where they could like, you know, fully integrate these scenes, or like, you know, as cool as the scene is, we're going to have to scrap it and wait for another one. Or just see if, because, you know, I don't know.
Is like Disney doesn't have to hit deadlines, right? Like, I mean... With this stuff, they're just streaming it. It's not like they have advertisers who they have to hit schedules for, right?
The Disney
Board
of Executives.
They can just push everything back.
The Disney Board of Directors has a fiduciary responsibility to their shareholders to return maximum value. And
sure.
You pay $2 billion for Star Wars, you want to return maximum value. You pay however many billions for... You know what I mean?
Like, I mean, they've already got their $2 billion back. But that's $4 billion, whatever
like,
it was. Yeah.
It's not reasonable value. It's not like it's enough
maximum,
value.
Sure.
It's maximizing the value. And any shareholder that accuses the board. So that's it. Like the maximizing of revenue. And unfortunately, I think the Star Wars community has demonstrated that they're okay with some of this stuff. They're fine with the kind of mid-tier Saturday morning cartoon level of plotting and development and all that kind of stuff if they get, you know, some Mandalorian helmets and some lightsabers and some cool ships and things that tick and crucially they can enjoy with their children. Like, we were just talking about this off podcast the other day, that this is such... I've never seen it before, because when I was growing up, my dad never made an attempt to get me into like the Lone Ranger. Or the Little Rascals. And if there was a revival of that stuff, it was like a one movie thing and done. Uh-huh. But since then, our culture has like, you know, an adult doesn't have to like wear a smoking jacket and smoke a pipe and be into cars. You can still keep your comic books and your lightsabers and your superhero capes. And that's such a great opportunity to just make money. Cause I had to beg my dad to like, oh my God, can I get this Luke Skywalker figure? Oh my, you know, if imagine if Lone Ranger was a series and he was jazzed about, I'm like, Dad, can I get a Lone Ranger six shooter? Hell yeah, son. We'll both get one. I'll run around as a Tonto and you can be the, like, oh my God, you're just printing money. Yeah. So like, I get it, but I'm also sad when I, you know, I see like the Peacemaker on DC and that's such, I mean, it's juvenile too, but it, and it's adult, mm-hmm. not just in the language and the violence, but it's like got some really deep characterization and some like clever twists and turns. And that's something that I just don't think we're ever going to get on a Marvel TV show or, yeah. Or a Star Wars TV show because they just, I don't know. It's not required to maximize the revenue apparently.
Yeah, no, it's seeming more and more like it. I think that's exactly what this was. It was, you know, Saturday morning level cartoon stuff, but like it wasn't offensive in that way, right? It wasn't like, oh boy, I'm watching something that's for children. And so yeah. they do squeak by with it. Because there's some genuinely impressive shit in here too. Like talk about, you know, how maybe they're just riding the ragged edge of a timeline here as far as production goes. Luke Skywalker looks incredible. Dude. Like so lifelike. I think they've passed Uncanny Valley here. Like
he's Luke.
The final episode of Mando season 2 did not look this good. There was something in the eyes that was just dead and wrong.
Yes.
They have fixed that problem and Luke looks like Luke.
It's shocking. Because like when we came back to the thing, you know, landed on the planet and the Mandalorian Din is observing the new Jedi temple being built and like there's no one there, it's just depopulated. I'm like, oh well, this makes sense. We're not going to see Luke because right. there's like we saw Luke on a like, you know, darkened in starship interiors wearing a hood. Like this is like full fucking blast sunlight and like brightly lit environments. And as I was formulating those thoughts, they cut the Grogu and Luke and I'm like, oh Jesus Christ, well, that's Mark Hamill from a time machine, man.
Right? But also, it was hilarious, too, because they cut to him, but he's got his eyes closed. He's not moving. He's got no expression on his face because he's meditating. I'm like, oh, this is all we're going to get of young Luke in this is going to be him sitting here doing nothing because that's all he can do. And then he's fucking jumping and flipping and talking and interacting with Grogu. And I'm like, okay, this is next level.
And the thing is that does excite me because if Star Wars ever decided to tell, again, I'm not saying adult in terms like Peacemaker where bodies need to explode and there's, you know, nudity and everyone's
complexity.
Swearing.
You're talking about.
But like this real, like if you could get the old gang back together, and I don't know how, like does Mark Hamill get paid for this shit? Like, but you could tell some honest to God Star Wars stories in a timeline that I am deeply fascinated with and really fill in some of the blanks and you could even, you know, I like with the right kind of thing, you could almost redeem the sequels, like, you know, explain how the hell the New Republic has lost the galaxy to this upstart.
You could try Imperial,
or the New Order. Like you could do a lot of things to kind of in the same way that the expanded universe has kind of integrated the prequels in a way that I didn't think would be possible when they first came out. Like, I think you could do that kind of stuff. You could fix some of these mistakes because how many series that are well written that I'd like to see about Luke, Han, and Leia?
Oh, yeah.
That's a huge demand that I have. So, yeah, like, I'm really excited by some of this stuff. And it just looks so solid.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big fan, and say what you will. Look, I was a teenager when I was reading them. I'm a big fan of the Kevin J. Anderson Jedi Academy trilogy.
Oh, no.
I know. Like I said, teenager.
Yeah, sure.
So there are some cool stories in there. When I saw Luke building this Jedi training facility, I'm like, okay, they're gonna EU this up a little bit. I don't know how much they're going to EU it up, how you know, if we're going to see Sun Crusher and shit like that or what. But I don't know. That got me kind of excited for those sort of stories. Those stories I remember around the edges of Star Wars with those characters.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool, like, you know, they got super weapons that are not just a Death Star, like the World Devastators, mm-hmm. and you said the Sun Crusher. And those are not, those are Star Wars legends, and we know that some legends are true. So, mm-hmm. like, they still have, I think it's the best way, is like you kind of wipe away all that stuff and non-canonically, but then you cherry pick the stuff that you want to bring back, and it's like, oh, this you know, is legendary, but it's true. There's still so much exciting potential, and you know, as much as I'm excited about like Han, Luke, and Leia stuff, I also hunger for like just genuinely new stories set in the Star Wars universe that have nothing to do with the like the mainline stuff.
Sure.
I was wondering if you could do like a Star Wars The Wire, like about corruption on Coruscant and how like, you know, the dream of the New Republic is dying, to kind of explain the First Order rise, like something like almost Game of Thrones level in its complexity and its emotional maturity.
Okay, we just got off the conversation where we said Disney's never going to do anything adult.
They're never going to do sex and violence, but they can do complexity. I mean, they can. I think the event, like the whole event, arc of the Avengers, is very complex and how they wove all that together. They just need to bring some of that stuff. And I think they're getting there. It's just that it's everything's moving too fast. You know, like I think in a perfect world, they would have shut Star Wars down for 2 years and just like thought.
Yeah.
But retool Disney Plus,
everything.
Disney Plus was coming out, so they had to push. They had to push. And
they'll have to continue to push. That's the problem with these streaming services, especially with a company like Disney. They're not going to go out and license shit. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, what they can do is they can go out and buy movie studios like 20th Century sure. Fox, right? They can go out and buy a bunch of catalog, but they also have to produce a lot of catalog, and look at where Netflix is with that, right? They've got some serious, you know, fiscal and also
mm-hmm.
Goodwill problems going on right now, I think, because of yeah. their frantic pace. So,
yeah,
that's going to be interesting to see what they do with Star Wars going forward. That said, I did not hate this episode. I thought it was, even if you look past just the CG stuff, there's a lot of nostalgia here, right? I mean, this whole training sequence with Grogu, how can you not feel a little bit of nostalgia for Empire Strikes Back?
Sure.
And then I hope they're setting up something big for the finale here, right? Some kind of confrontation, I guess, between the Pike Syndicate and Boba's group. Who knows? This might be a multi-season arc that they're headed down, probably is, if I have to look at it and say what's going to happen. Yeah, I doubt we're going to resolve everything next episode, but who knows?
It also kind of makes me, because this new structure, because I was remembering like, oh, you know, like when we look forward to Mandalorian season 3, we're going to get at least one Mando that's not going to be shackled mm-hmm. to Baby Grogu. Not that we hate Baby Grogu, we love Baby Grogu, but like it seemed likely that you're going to get at least, and I'm like, oh, you'll be, but like I didn't see the Book of Boba Fett reuniting probably Grogu right. and the Mandalorian, at least setting the tracks to that. And mm-hmm. so like it seems entirely likely that the Mandalorian season 3 will come back with the status quo intact. And that makes it real. So it makes it really hard to predict what's going to happen next. And when it's really hard to predict, it's almost like, why bother? And I think a lot of the fun in terms of like analyzing shows like this is making those predictions and trying to, you know, be attuned, you know, one with the show's force. And when so much story can like take place in other pockets of the, it's really hard to say, like, what is the direction of the Mandalorian? What is the direction of the, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi series? What is the direction of the Ahsoka? Because like they're all in each other's stuff. It's just like we talked about, you know, what is a Captain America movie versus what's an Avenger movie?
Yeah. I mean, I the know. Direction of Mando is going to be merchandising with Baby Grogu fully, like the Model 3 version of Baby Grogu with full chainmail, Mando armor. Like you got to get that out on store shelves for Christmas. Otherwise, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's also rekindled my dislike of the Jedi Order this episode.
Oh, when he puts the choice to Grogu? Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you can either forsake everything about being a Jedi because you love people, or you can stay here and train.
It's just so fucking manipulative and abusive.
Right? Oh, yeah. Like,
Jesus Christ, it's kind of crazy. But yeah, we'll get to there. But I I mean, it's so funny because, like, this episode confounded me because, like, it's called From the Desert Comes a Stranger, and you start off with Cobb Vanth, and I'm like, oh, well, here's the stranger in the desert, and he's going to join up with Boba Fett, and that's going to be cool. And then, oh, no, we got this other guy coming. And then, you know, we smash cut from there to the Mandalorian. I'm like, oh, my God, we're back on the Mando show. And it's... I liked it. And there's like a lot of, there's also some of this stuff where it's like, I didn't watch the Clone Wars, but I played the Star Wars miniatures game during the height of the Clone Wars. And so a lot of these guys, like the blue man, with the cowboy hat at the end, like I recognize that from the miniatures game. I've never seen a Clone Wars episode.
Yeah.
But I'm like, oh, that guy was a fucking badass on the tabletop. Let me tell you, rolling D20s against this guy, so this is like a losing affair. So it's weird. I've been loosely connected to Star Wars my entire life, and I've absorbed some of this stuff by osmosis.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. But, I guess we should get into it.
We should. Yeah, let's do that. But first, let's take a quick break.
Getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and ball move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of bald movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwe is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
All right, we start up with Cobb Vanth, Raylan Givensing some Pike Syndicate goons during a spice buy. And I loosely say Raylan Givensing because, man, these scenes just don't quite sparkle without the Elmore Leonard dialogue. It's like half rate. It tries to get there in some spots, but you just can't beat Elmore Leonard for dialogue.
It's pretty good, though. The whole, like, uh-huh. this is a recognizably, you know, railinging some bad guy. Of like, you know, you got your hand on your pistol and you're like, yeah, there's two ways this can go. And we just all assume that you read the map wrong and no harm. And mm-hmm. and someone's got to try to pull on this guy. And
But there's no, pew, like, pew. Next one's coming faster moment, right? Like,
yeah, but I guess Raylan, it took 3 seasons for him to get to that line. So, sure. like, you know, yeah. But it's interesting because the other thing is, like, they've always talked about spice in Star Wars.
Uh-huh.
And I've never, I guess, got that it was a narcotic.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I don't know. I guess I thought it was some kind of, like, thing like in Dune where it was something that helped your cognition and, you know, it was like some kind of, like, it's a good drug to have, kind of like, I guess, a super, what do they call, what are they, Ritalin, like super Ritalin or something. Sure. But I guess it's like a highly addictive drug. So when the spice came, that this isn't like a legit industry, this is a crime industry coming on. And they made that clear when they have the loose spice. And although I think it's funny, you just got like a, it's like doing a big Coke deal.
Mm-hmm.
And like the Coke is just in someone's little hope chest.
Right, you know? Yeah.
Like it's not bagged up for a resale or anything. It's just in somebody's cedar chest with a little, like two tooth key, securing it.
Mm-hmm.
But man, the angles, like the wide shots, the naked appeal to, Westerns, the environment, the desert town, like it's Deadwood in space and it's good. Like, yeah. Why fight it? If you got the Timothy Oliphant.
Right. Yeah, no, he's great. He's still great. Not a bad scene overall. Kind of like it. He kicks the spice over at the end and I'm thinking, boy, there's some Jawas somewhere on the plains that just got high as fuck, man. The wind comes blowing through and
that's why you keep getting crate dragons, man.
Right?
You're just setting up a rail of coke for them to do through your streets. No wonder they're coming through snorting. This is like the 17th
when the winds
gang.
Are made of spice, everybody's yeah. high on Tatooine. Come on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Freetown, baby. Woo!
Oh, boy. Yeah, what are they getting up to in the tents out there?
Mm-mm.
All right, we get some more Mando and his N1 fighter here. I wish they would have given this thing a name so I could just call it something, but it probably won't be around long enough. He flies out to see Grogu, but he has to wait while Luke and Grogu train a little bit. They lift frogs, they go for a walk, and Luke tries to give him some memories of his home. And memories are of a Jedi being slaughtered by stormtroopers and then taking him.
Yeah, this is apparently Grogu. I mean, this math checks out. I think we even did it. Like, how the hell? And he was there for the slaughter of the younglings in the Jedi Temple.
Yeah, sir, clone troopers.
You got Order 66.
Yep.
Which they never... I never thought they did a very good job selling the slaughter of the Jedi. Like, I've seen a Jedi hold off mm-hmm. like 30 battle droids. I don't think 6 clone troopers will get it done against 3 Jedi, but, you know, that I guess.
Yeah, this is one of those scenes, and I always think this when scenes show, like, somebody hanging by a rope, and then part of that rope breaks,
mm-hmm.
and yet they don't fall. I always think that's just not how ropes work, right? Like when one strand goes, it makes it less stable. It uh-huh. it makes it more likely to break, and so the whole thing just breaks.
Yeah.
Here
yeah.
it's like, oh, they've taken out 4 stormtroopers, and yet somehow now they're overwhelmed by them. I'm not sure how that works. This is the inverse of that.
Yeah. But
yeah. No, I mean,
it worked like in the early, like if. Like on the early stages where they truly got him by surprise, where the Jedi had no, and then, you know, they made it a point yeah. of like the Jedi couldn't sense this in the Force because the clones were like literally one moment loyal. There's no danger. And the next moment they're murderous killing machines. But any Jedi that survived the first 5 minutes of Order 66 is going to know what's up. And like, mm-hmm. it would take a small army to take him down. And I just never thought that they told that tell very well. Like, I don't know how you do it. You know, you need like 100 clone troopers versus each Jedi. And the Jedi are like, yeah, I mean, to me, this is like the gates of Thermopylae. This is like the Battle of Thermopylae. Like, you got like 4 Jedi in a corridor, like 10 feet wide against like a platoon. Like, there's no fucking way they're getting through that.
Yeah.
But anyway.
When I saw Mando fly in and then nobody's there and he sits down on this bench, I'm like, boy, there better be a point to this waiting. because waiting is never good in a story. Like, you want your characters to always be doing something.
Yeah.
And I think there is a point to it by the end of this episode, because the choice that Luke eventually puts to Grogu has to be a choice that he's informed on. He can't just make a choice blind. And so I feel like all this training that they do while Mando's waiting for them is kind of worth it there.
It also mirrors the choice, you know, because he's given a choice about whether he wants to see Grogu or not, and it mirrors the choice mm-hmm. that Grogu makes as well. I want to talk about
mirrors that choice that Luke made, which is hilarious, right? Because Luke does in Empire Strikes Back exactly the thing he's saying Grogu can't do here, right? Which is go help his loved ones and then mm-hmm. come back and be a Jedi. Mm-hmm. Luke does that. So, like, Grogu isn't giving up everything about becoming a Jedi if he goes and makes this decision.
Yeah.
And Luke knows that. Luke has to know that.
I want to talk about Mark Hamill, because he's credited as Luke Skywalker.
Interesting.
And the thing is I did a lot of research on this, and I don't think at this time no one's quite sure how they did this or how this is all working. There's speculation that they've taken Mark Hamill's voice and used a digital filter on it to make him sound younger. There's speculation that they just played, you know, recorded, took a whole all of like Luke's speech from Star Wars, because you can see that now. Like, there's a couple Twitch people that their donos are read in like famous people's voices. It's pretty seamless. There's people that said that, like, you know, like I said, Mark came in and did. They had a stunt. They had a body double last year that they recast. He was seen as the younger X-Wing pilot from the last episode. They got two new guys. One, Scott Lang, is listed as the stunt double for Luke. And then Graham Hamilton is served as the performance artist. So the way I hear that is, like, Graham Hamilton is the guy who's just like standing around acting. And anytime he's doing like flips and shit, that's Scott Lang. Mm-hmm. Both of these gentlemen have a medium to low passing resemblance to Mark Hamill. Not as nearly as good as the X-Wing pilot, I didn't think. And I was like, I wonder if they'll do something like they got like 100% CGI filter on his face, and mm-hmm. every time we see Luke, they'll back it down 5%.
And like eventually Luke will become the stunt double?
Yeah, like, I honestly think that would be a cool way to do it, because it's so weird. Is Mark Hamill getting paid for like being an actor and using his face, or is he just getting paid like he's going in here and doing Joker lines? Like, it's
so he was. So it's interesting. I know that Carrie Fisher was paid for her likeness as Leia when they CG'd her. So, and they had to pay
Moff Tarkin's estate.
Yeah, Peter Cushing's estate. So I assume, yes, Mark Hamill is getting paid for this. He would almost certainly have to be, right? Here's what they do, though. They do the 5% thing you're talking about. Every time they show him, they back down the filter. Eventually, he becomes a stuntman. But they also go back and they pull a Hayden Christensen Force Ghost thing where they every time they show him, 5 minutes of the original movies get slightly altered. And so eventually the stunt person is just, but then they have the problem in another, you know, 50 years where they got to do it to another actor.
And let's keep doing it. Wash, keep rinse, repeat. It. Not like this. Not like, I didn't want to go this way.
I mean, that's so in the wheelhouse of Star Wars. Come on, man.
Dude,
the special editions.
Yeah. Wow. Brave new world we're entering here.
Oh, into totally.
A lot of the stuff that I remember, like, 20, 30 years ago, what happens when we have all digital actors and there's no one that's like we are there, man. There's no reason why they can't just make a generic looking dude or woman or whatever they like that mm-hmm. is literally I saw a picture, a photorealistic person, and it was on the cover. It might have been on like Time Magazine, it might have been Wired. It's like, this person doesn't exist. It was an entirely digital created thing. And I don't know why you can't just build like you're playing a Skyrim character creator. And then you have some synthesized voice, and then you've got all this talent that you don't have to pay anymore.
Yeah. No, dude, I mean, it's coming for sure. Like, it's now a matter of getting that cheap enough and fast enough. Like, at this point, they have the model of Luke Skywalker, right? Like, they can put Luke into anything they want with relative ease. They don't have to create that stuff from scratch anymore.
Yeah, and they're only doing these, like, have you heard this VTuber thing?
Sure, yeah.
Where, like, people are not even appearing as themselves. They're appearing as, like, these synthetic, you know, like, essentially face rig cam full-time.
It's going to be
interesting to see what Hollywood looks like in, like, 2040.
I do feel like, you know, you're probably never going to get to the point where you don't have any actors involved. It'll just be the actors don't have to look anything like the performance you see on screen, right? Because it's always,
I don't know.
I would think it would always be cheaper. Well, always is a big word. Not always, but it for a very long time, it's going to be cheaper to pay somebody to do a mocap thing on a really, really good CG model. Than it would be to just animate it from scratch.
The problem is right now the problem in Hollywood is like the pay scale for people who wear golf balls on their body and lend their voice, unless they're famous. Like, you know, if you're
Andy Serkis, sure.
Bender Dick comes a bunch, they'll pay you $1 million to crawl around a stage and act like Smog. But if you're just some dude that lended a couple of voice lines in Halo and Destiny, you're not going to get paid. You're not going to get Mark Hamill money. You're not going to get Peter Cushing money. No, you're going to get Jack and Squat. And I think they need to fix that.
But still, the unions need to step in and start, you know, advocating more for the people who are behind these CG performances. Because
I agree. But it's entirely, like, I'm like thinking of, like, you know, what could, like, George Lucas have done in making Star Wars if he, like, could have literally populated a whole universe full of artificial beings and had them give convincing performances, you know, like what, or like George Lucas, but like what kind of directorial and cinematography talent can you have if you can do that cheaply? Like, you can have a Cast of Thousands movie and it costs you 10 grand, you know, a couple hundred hours of render time on a modest PC in 10 years. Like, that will be kind of crazy.
I wonder if it gets worse for a while. Cause, like, I feel like directors, you know, they direct actors, right? They aren't actors. So, like, coming up with a whole cloth performance here, that's an actor's job. They interpret this material. Whereas a director like George Lucas,
if you gave him a box and said this gives you 100% control over this person's face,
I don't think they would quite get there.
I think
the
there's some
try.
That wouldn't, but there's some guy like George Lucas, like, finally they're going to be as fast as intense as I want, you know, like, he's like,
but it's going to go wrong.
This is all I've ever wanted. No, I 100%. You're going to get like Queen Amidala, only more so.
Exactly. But, yeah. So it's not all good there, but yeah, you'll probably have more like actor or performance directors, right? You'll have like the director job will be split because the director job's already split between cinematographers and lighters and all these things. Yeah. But like, yeah, getting in there and coaching out a performance from a CG model is probably going to definitely become a thing that like every movie has on set.
But the other thing is like, man, with the way AI is going, like, I think you could literally like it would be interesting to see, like, in 20 years, could you just put in a script, like a 70-page script?
Yeah. Have a movie come
into a machine and have it like first pass, like, this is what the machine thinks of the, you know, you describe the characters, it populates it, does the action, does the camera angle, and then all you got to do is go in and tweak it if you don't like it.
Why do you need to write a script? Just have an AI do that too.
Yeah, dude, fuck,
just take
the
Netflix algorithm and pop
turn off
pipe
the lights,
it in
everybody. It's been a
Batman Sandler's you know, click 4.
Yeah. We're just, you know what? Fuck it. Let the robots take care of us and entertain us and wipe our asses. I'm ready. The speedrun extinction. Yeah.
I feel like we pulled a switcheroo akin to the Book of Boba Fett, where we're not even talking about Boba Fett anymore.
It's true. Yeah. And Boba, he's just going to glower about it. Oh, you mad? You mad we're not talking about your show, Boba? Huh?
Yeah.
What are you going to do about it? You got no muscle.
All right, let's move on to Ahsoka showing up. Her and Mando also take a walk. Mando sees Grogu from a distance, but Ahsoka convinces him that seeing the Padawan foundling, I guess he's both at this point, will only make things harder for him. So Mando gives her the Mandalorian armor he made and leaves.
Yeah.
And this is where we find out Luke's building a Jedi school. I didn't think this was Yavin.
Maybe. I guess it could be.
Because that's where he builds it, and it looks like it could be.
It is kind of, yeah, primitive.
But it's a lot of bamboo and stuff. Less like giant redwoods, but...
Yeah.
You know, that was a moon of Yavin, so... Who knows? Yeah, but I was excited by that because of my Jedi Academy love.
I tell you, I was distressed. Like, when he's within sight of Grogu and she's, like, being a real... Jedi about not letting him see it. It reminded me of like the Southpaw movie where it's like, come on, just let Jake Gyllenhaal see his daughter. Come on. Like, get out. I need, because like, you know, like, yes, last time we were talking about like maybe they're stumbling towards a unifying theme of the Star Wars universe, like something like it, you know, the Avengers Infinity War they're gearing up to, and that's like bringing balance to the Force. And, you know, there's like in the mid going of this episode, it's like Luke's like, you know, showing him a lightsaber. It's like, you know, the galaxy is a dangerous place, Grogu. I'm going to teach you how to protect yourself. And the Mando bringing in the armor, like, you know, Jedi have always been about using things for defense rather than offense.
Yeah.
And I really thought they were building, continuing that stream. But like at the last minute, they kind of like completely zigged from that and made this like less about unity, like being the Padawan and the Foundling, and more of like, you have to fucking choose. This is a binary choice and you need to fucking make it right now, little man.
This feels like a false choice to me. It really does. Feels like he's gonna come back around a la Luke, right? He makes the quote-unquote wrong choice for being a Jedi and then comes around and he's a Jedi anyway.
It's true, I
think that's like, where they're headed with this. But
yeah,
we'll,
you're right. There's a lot of like, you know, Luke running off impetuously to face Vader, even though all of his mentors are saying it's a wrong idea. And then he comes back the next movie and Yoda's like, oh, you know, turns out that was okay, too. Yeah, there's some rich history of Padawans saying fuck you to the masters. And it turned out okay.
For sure. there's some rich history of it not.
That's
Vader.
True.
Is a pretty good example of that. Yeah.
Galaxy in flames either way, you know, it'll be fun.
All right, Luke continues Grogu's physical training with jumping, balance, and reflex training. Eventually, Ahsoka delivers the Mandalorian armor to Luke, and he wonders about what to do about Grogu, and then Ahsoka leaves. I really love, you know, speaking of Empire references, Grogu in the backpack.
Oh, they got the blue backpack.
Yeah, that's so good.
They reverse Yoda-ing him. He's the the master carrying the Padawan.
Yeah.
He's giving him like Rocky Balboa speeches to him. the world ain't all sunshine and rainbows, Grogu. It's a mean and nasty place. It'll beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. Got to get back up. Always get back up. Yeah, it's super. You get the drone. Grogu, beast mode in the groan, seeing him go from like zero vertical leap to doing like Yoda type shit. Yeah, it's good. And like, there's also kind of like a little ominous about Luke when I thought there's something ominous to Luke saying it's almost like he's remembering it rather than I'm teaching it. And you think, you know, Grogu spent some time under the tutelage of Gus Fring.
Oh yeah.
And I'm like, what all is he going to remember? There's so much trauma here too. Like, are we gonna see Grogu kind of flirt with the dark side? It seems like a very Star Wars thing to do, and I don't know if everyone's ready for that.
Is this the first we really know of his backstory at all? Like, did we even know that he was a youngling at the time?
No.
Right. So I feel like there's a pretty big development that,
yeah,
you know, we're just kind of glossing over, but yeah,
God, it's so cute.
There's a lot there.
Luke goes to touch his head, and he's kind of like, you know, like a half feral cat that's kind of like not sure about letting someone touch him. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they develop it.
For sure. All right, Mando flies to Boba's palace to make good on being his muscle, and Fennec says the Pike Syndicate is amassing forces, and they don't have the muscle for all out war, even with Mando. Mando says, I can help with that. And he flies to Mos Pelgo, or Freetown as it's now
Freetown.
Known, to recruit Marshal Cobb Vanth and his people. They don't want much to do with this, though. It's a city folk fight, according to them.
Gee, how could you get this rough spun people on your side?
Yeah.
What development could possibly happen that would make them want to join fight en masse?
Is there anything from like a specific genre of movies that we could mine? Maybe.
I really love the Jawas with the crate dragon skull to the front of the crawler, like there's some massive Mad Max like running through.
They're gonna make a mean crate dragon broth with that. Just like soup for everyone.
I just think it's so fucking metal. And also, did you notice they had the crate dragon's rib cage inside the bar now? They've installed it as like a vaulted ceiling type of deal. And I thought, nice. I went back and actually watched the Marshall episode from The Mandalorian to make sure. But yeah, they have installed, they've been picking apart the bones of the crate to build up Freetown and make the Jawas sandcrawlers that much cooler.
Nice.
I like them catching up too. You know, them both, the Marshall observing that we both lost something we're fond of. You know, you lost a little guy, lost my armor.
Yeah, at first I was wondering, oh no, what happened to Cobb Vanth when his deputy comes out there and starts to greet Mando, and I'm like, oh no.
Yeah.
Surely he's not gone. These guys just, they're setting something up, which was obvious.
The scene around the battle table, man, the mod squad, you got Boba Fett, Fennec Shand, the
Kersantan
and Mando, and then the mod squad sticking out like four sore little pinky fingers.
Right.
You know,
I will say helped by the lack of their mod bikes, their speeder bikes.
It's true. Right.
They don't look quite as dumb.
They don't look quite as dumb. I still think they look too bright and shiny. And some of the modifications look goofy, too. Like, they're not quite well integrated into the prosthetic isn't integrated into the actor. Maybe that's the thing. It's like, you know, having giant ear discs in your ears, you know.
They're proud of it, man.
Or like, you know, crazy getting Bart Simpson tattooed on your face. Maybe the point is to stick out and look weird. In which case,
I think so.
Good job, kids. You got it. You're nailing it. You're really putting off this old man.
That's the whole point, man.
Really wanting to run you off my front yard. I got to tell you, the instinct's kicking in.
All right. Cobb decides to call a meeting of all fighting age townspeople. But before he can, a stranger wanders into town and Cobb's idiot deputy gets him shot. And the stranger declares that Tatooine belongs to the syndicate and he leaves. And then, you know, this is the inciting incident that I'm sure is going to lead the townspeople to get Boba's back. This guy has a cool design. I've not seen him either because I'm not a watcher of the Clone Wars. Mm-hmm. I've not seen any episodes of that. I did not remember the miniature until you were talking about it. And I was like, oh, yeah, I think you had that one.
Cad Bane was his name.
What's his name?
Cad Bane.
Pretty good name.
He looks cool.
I like his design. Yeah, it's very cool. And the way they introduce him with not showing those eyes, right? Those big red. I'm sure this dude is definitely on spice with how red his eyes are. He got a gust of that wind in his face earlier. But it's cool. They don't show those eyes. And when they do finally reveal him, there's something very unsettling about him.
Yeah, and his sharp teeth, the way he's biting his lip and kind of like it's and I understand that there is no small amount of history between Bane and Boba Fett. Like Boba Fett beating Bane was kind of like his, coming of age story in the Clone Wars, going from the little boy who's watched his dad get slaughtered to the man we know as Boba Fett.
So Boba Fett's already beat this guy once?
Already beat him once, I think.
What does beat mean?
I think this is the guy that actually gave Boba's distinctive dent on his helmet.
And
he thinks he killed him, but he actually didn't. If I remember last year, we had a lore master who was kind of sending us in snippets of like the Clone Wars history, and I remember that being part of it. But the thing is like I know there's some people watch the Clone Wars and are beating their heads and they're like, you know, ripping their but like. Relax. This show is going to let us know all the backstory that we need to know. There's probably going to be some flashbacks. There's probably going to be like we're not going to be left in the dark for who this guy is and what he stands for and anyway.
Yeah, probably right.
He does. It's such a smart idea to bring Timothy Oliphant into this universe because he seems like he's made to introduce a character like this.
Sure.
Because if this guy just kind of walked in before we had the Marshall Vanth storyline, it might have been like, what the fuck is this weird Western shit in Star Wars? But mm-hmm. I think it greased the wheels, and now you've got, like, you know, they're bringing this guy into live action. He looks great.
Yeah. No, totally. Cobb gets shot in this. I'm sure he's going to be fine. You know, there's probably a back to tank nearby. I don't know. I think the town's on Boba's side now, so he's going to have some muscle, and I assume we'll see a lot of that in the final episode. But then we go over to Pikers heading into a casino, the casino in the show, and detonating a bomb. Casino is done. Out of business.
Jessica Biel's dead.
For remodeling. Apparently, yeah.
So Jessica or Jennifer?
I don't know.
I think it's Jessica. Yeah, I don't know how she would live. It's like she was like right there by the case. So
yeah, I don't think many people in this place did live.
But I wonder, like, is like what gal? I didn't feel anything.
No, like, me either.
Yeah, like these are characters are barely new. They were kind of like archetypes of things, and this feels like. I definitely care about the Marshall getting shot and kind of Freetown by extension. But like, I don't know how this plays into, maybe this is what brings the other three families into the fold.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. I think those other families need more time to
yeah,
come
but
around.
Like, if this is a signal that the syndicate is not content to coexist, like they are going to, like, they want to run all the vice on Tatooine, you know, it kind of gives a lie to the promise this Cad makes. It's like, hey, as long as the spice flows, we're not going to be. So I think this might be the thing that gets the Trandoshans and the other guys off of the benches and into the war.
Yeah, could be. We'll see. Then we go over to the final scene. Luke forcing Grogu to choose between becoming a Jedi or living with Mando. But the episode ends before he actually makes the choice.
And see, that's where I thought it's like this choice of, like, you know, attack or defend. I thought, okay, Luke's going to approve of him choosing the armor over the sword.
Right.
But then he goes on to say, like, you can only choose one. And if you choose the lightsaber, then you can stay with me and I'll teach you the ways of the Jedi. But if you choose the male, you'll get
you
to go back to the Mandalorian.
Everything I've ever taught you, yeah. Like,
yeah, and again, like, you know, you're the guy who ran off to save your friends when both your Jedi masters were telling you this is going to end in the destruction of the galaxy. So, like, is this a test within a test? But mostly maybe. It's like, God damn, these Jedis are just assholes. They're assholes. They're all talking about balance and a force, but they are wildly imbalanced. They're wildly unhealthy emotionally individuals.
It's true. It's true.
And this is like a brutal thing to do to a baby. I get he's 50 years old, but he's a baby. So right. it made me think the Jedi. I thought Luke would be better, but I guess his academy ends in disaster. We've already seen it. So shit like this, Luke.
I suppose, yeah.
Shit like this.
Right. Hard lines you take. Come on.
All Kylo Ren wanted to do is call his mom one weekend, and Luke's like, no, you gotta fucking strangle that attachment to my sister.
Okay,
and
you gotta,
the rest is history.
Yeah, be more like water. It's flexible, right? It's the Bruce Lee thing, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You can be flexible and still be strong. Just,
yes.
Come on.
No one will call the ocean weak. Jesus.
No one who's been in it anyway.
Yeah.
All right, that's it for the episode. What do we have to do now?
Well, we're going to consider feedback. We're going to open up the old bag, tribe@baldmove.com. But first, another break.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, everybody, we're back with some more feedback. If you want to send us back more feedback, you can do that tribe@baldmove.com. First up is Neander Bear. You've probably gotten 20 emails about this, but the pilot droid RX-24 from the original Star Tours ride was replaced by C-3PO as the pilot in 2011. The ride was rebuilt and upgraded. RX-24 still appears on the ride as one of the visuals in the line. He's also seen in Olga's Cantina, the bar, and the Star Wars part of the park. I did not know this. As I said, I've never been to Disney World. I just saw that like some Disney World aficionados were excited about it. I think it's dumb. I think it's dumb to replace a cool new part of the lore with just putting C-3PO in as your pilot. Like,
yeah.
You know, makes the universe feel smaller, but what are you going to do?
Also, we glossed over totally the fact that R2-D2 is in this.
Oh, Jesus, we did. Right?
We completely didn't talk about that.
We did. It's interesting because I've gotten back into Adam Savage. I kind of lost track of what he was doing and tested over the pandemic and being busy, but I've been catching up. And he's always talks about one of his first gigs at ILM was like, get this R2-D2 from England, bring it over here and make it work. And he's got this whole story about the R2s. And he's the thing he's working on is the thing that makes him go from being upright to like slanted forward with the third foot coming down to stabilize him. And he's like, got this cute story about like, you know, all the English pneumatic hoses are all metric and the Americans are all imperial. What a pain in the ass. He's talking about how terrifying Like, he's like, those pneumatics were no joke. Like, R2 would just like, thoop, thoop. Like, you know, he'd like shut forward. And it's like, if you got your fingers are in there, you'd lose your fucking fingers. And I couldn't help but think of that when I saw R2 thoop, thoop and start rolling around.
Yeah. And we didn't talk about the androids either. I thought those were super cool looking.
They were cool, although the engineer part of me thought those legs are very spindly for the weight that they're like. I would think realistically they'd sink halfway into the soft ground when they're carrying those giant boulders. But
sure,
they did look cool. They did look cool.
Yeah.
Regarding the Naboo starfighter, Neander Bear says it could work out just fine for a bounty hunter if he only takes dead or alive jobs. How much space do you need to bring back a severed head? Well, that's fine for the dead part.
Sure, the alive part's tougher.
I guess he just always brings them back dead, takes the lesser bounty.
I think you just go rent a U-Haul bounty trailer and attach it to the back of that thing and you're good, right?
Yeah, you could do that. You could take it to like whatever the equivalent of the UPS store and have them quick carbon froze and then you just strap them to the wings.
There you
that
go.
That would be kind of fucking metal.
There you go. Yeah.
That's a bounty hunter coming into port and there's just like four or five carbon froze dudes just chained to the hull, like
Jesus. Like hanging like Wookiee pelts from the ship. Yeah.
That's the Star Wars I want to see.
Yeah.
That's right. Final observation from Neander Bear. Why the surprise at the no docking ring for hyperspace? X-Wings don't need them. They're small one-man fighters. Luke went all the way from Hoth to Dagobah in one.
Yeah.
What do you think? Because I got a response to this.
I don't know. What's your response? It seems reasonable to me.
And I don't know how much of this has been legendified, but canonically, the New Republic prized like hit and run and like, I guess, terror tactics, asymmetrical warfare, and the survivability of their pilots, whereas the Empire was the opposite. Like, you know, they're built around big capital ships that just would come and just do overwhelming swarms of these cheaply built, mass-produced fighters that didn't have shields, didn't have atmosphere containment inside. They're like, you know, they're just much cheaper. So the New Republic, to help that out, most of their starfighters, I believe at least the Y-Wing, A-Wing, and X-Wing could all do hyperspace jumps. But that was considered unusual. It's like it'd be like having a fighter. If most of the fighter, the Americas, you know, our fighter doctrine is like all carrier based. And, you know, then you had like one nation that didn't have carriers. So their fighters could fly twice around the world without refueling. Yeah. Like it still would be unusual. But I think that's like the New Republic is seen that those fighter designs are seen as very unusual. And also, like, I don't know, because that's honestly, when I first saw it, I thought it was going to be a Y-Wing.
Oh,
yeah. I didn't think like Naboo Starfighter when I saw the, you know, you were talking about how when I had the cloak, you know, when it had the dust cover over it, I was like, oh, that looks like a Y-Wing. That's going to be kind of cool. But
if you spin it around, I guess it does. Right.
Yeah. Like if it's a coming or going. Yeah.
Right. Sure.
Moving on to Jeffrey K. Sorry, Jeffy K. Says, hey, they're a huge fan. My 12-year-old son is also a huge fan of Star Wars and wanted to share his thoughts with you on your coverage of the show. Let's consider the feedback from the core audience of the Book of Boba Fett.
Okay.
So you guys have said that you believe they should have not made the Book of Boba Fett. Instead, they should have put him in The Mandalorian more. I get your point, but around the time the Star Wars movie Solo came out, people said they might make a Boba Fett movie. Everyone got excited, but then it got canceled. Everybody's craving more from this bounty hunter. Also, Mandalorian's not the greatest show because they decided to make the stereotype of stormtroopers being stupid a real part of Star Wars. And Boba Fett should not be part of that. Thank you.
Good points.
I admire the passion. If you listen to our Mandalorian coverage last year, you know that Jim and I were also kind of put off by the herder stormtroopers suck at actually stormtrooping. and I think if Disney was smart, they would take... This feedback from their core audience really, really serious, you know? Stop making the bounty hunters look stupid. So thanks for that, Jeffy and Jeffy Jr. Moving on to Jessica. Not sure if you guys saw this already, but I thought you might enjoy it. It's a meme from The Mandalorian subreddit, which I guess has given up trying to separate the Bobas from the Mandos.
Good for them.
And it's supposed to be Bryce Dallas Howard being convinced by Dave Filoni to direct another episode of The Mandalorian. Uh-huh. And it's the scene from Say Anything where John Cusack mm-hmm. rolls up with the boombox and he's just playing the theme to The Mandalorian outside.
Oh, God.
Whatever her name is, his window.
Yeah.
As she's trying to sleep and like progressively like waking up. Yeah. Pretty funny. Pretty funny stuff. Hopefully that'll work because I would like to see Bryce do another one of these. Mike from Sydney. After watching the latest episode and finding myself utterly bemused, I was reflecting, or maybe just wishfully thinking, on what the book of Boba is trying to say. I was starting to wonder if they're setting up Boba to fail against the syndicate and abandon the crime lord idea. This way the whole gang can get together for Mando Season 3, whatever that's going to be. I've come to this conclusion on the fact that they initially showed him to be incompetent and then have essentially edited him out of the last two episodes. They're clearly tracking back to Mando and Grogu. So does Boba get the Alfred the Butler treatment in Mando Season 3? I really hope they take your idea of making the overall theme returning balance to the Force, although Miss Kennedy sure knows how to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. Seems so. What do you think of this, Jim?
What would defeat look like? I mean, the concept of tribe is very important to Boba at this point, and he needs to have his tribe wiped out to say, hey, you're outclassed here. So like you'd have to kill off Fennec and Kersantan and like pretty much everybody who's signed on to this, Cobb probably, and maybe everyone except for Mando. And then, yeah, they can go and be the tribe of two, right? Into Season 3 of Mando, and maybe you can get up to Tribe of 3 by the time Grogu shows up. But yeah, it would take a destruction of his tribe again, right?
It seems like it. I'm trying to think of, like, is Boba a big enough dick to not care about all the suffering of the town folk?
Mm-hmm.
And I could go, like, it seems like he wouldn't be the kind of guy that would be that callous, but, like, Boba's got his foot on both places because...
Yeah.
I thought there'd be a bigger reaction to his Tusken tribe being wiped out. Like, he got, like, cold, dispassionate revenge on the people who are immediately responsible. Mm-hmm. But I didn't get this idea. Like, and I was really hoping there'd be some survivors from that clan. Maybe they will show up in the end of the season as foot soldiers for him. But nothing quite felt right about... They did such a great job those first two episodes making me believe in the fact that he had been adopted and he had really identified and, you know, he's woven their robes and culture into his armor, literally. Mm-hmm. But I know, I guess if like he just can't win, like the syndicate has starships and legions of people and infinite oceans of cash. It's like, you know, if the mob moves into some small Midwestern town and's like, I'm going to take over the cocaine and a trade here, like, you know, you can have the hero, you can have the street hero of Cincinnati fight all he wants, but he's going to get fucking shoved. He's going to be showed up headless in the Ohio River. Like,
yeah,
I think there's definitely scenarios where this Boba just can't win. He doesn't have the mm-hmm. reach. I mean, the Hutts are piecing out of this situation.
Sure.
And it wasn't because of Boba. It was because like a bigger fish. So I don't know. I mean, that would cleanly get, like you said, the gang back together again. And like a show that has Kersantan and you got Fennec and Boba and Mando and Cobb. Like, that's a fucking cool show. And the mod squad gets tragically killed. Is that part of his tribe? Can he wipe out? Is four more tribesmen enough?
There you go. Yeah, to wipe him out. Part of the tribe that I see as sacrificial, but Boba might not. So yeah, kill them.
Yeah, and like Boba can be like the mentor to help, you know, Din kind of figure out like the middle path between his Mandalorian fanaticism and maybe the careless. The complete lack of traditionality that the Bo-Katan kind of shows, the impetuousness.
Yeah, here's why I'm not so sure about this happening. That would also condense two shows down to one and condense the Disney slate of shows when it's clear that they're trying to build something out I just don't think it's likely to collapse the Book of Boba Fett back into the Mandalorian from a purely like meta sort of angle there.
Well, you see like with AMC does with The Walking Dead and other of their shows where like they divide a season and even like, why can't they do that in The Mandalorian? Like, hey, we're going to get 6 episodes in February. We're going to get 6 episodes in June. We're going to get 6 episodes. Like, why does it have to be the Book of Boba Fett, then The Mandalorian, then like some of the others like Ahsoka? Like, okay, you got like you need a little bit of separation because Jedi can't roll with mercenary bounty hunters all the time. There'd just be too much friction in the party. But like this stuff, I don't know. But on the other hand, like, why do they give a shit? Like, all this can just be limited miniseries that all never end and keeps snowballing into others. So
yeah. I suppose I could see Book of Boba Fett being a limited series, but they haven't been promoting it as that.
Right.
And I don't know. They've never really done a great job telling us what the Book of Boba Fett is going to be, right? Even from that first little preview we got at the end of the Mando season 2 finale, it's like, what is this thing? It just says Book of Boba Fett.
Mm-hmm.
We have no idea what it's going to be. And eventually you come to hear it's a series, but like they didn't get out in front of any of that stuff. So maybe it does change back. And this is just like a chapter out of the book of what becomes the Book of Mandalorian.
We'll see. Because like I said, the fact that they can split this up and like add new things in between seasons like makes it really hard to predict where it's going. Because like, who knows? Like, there could be 2 more shows between now and The Mandalorian that completely changes the state of the board. So it's like, why speculate on what Mando season 3 looks like? Because shit, Ahsoka could have half of The Mandalorian in it. So
right.
Alex with a shocker. Have you guys realized Mayor Mock Cheese is a pun for Mayor McCheese? Favreau slips in a pun under the table. Mayor McCheese.
Mayor McCheese. Okay.
After the stunning guest appearance of the concept of the Hamburglar in this week's episode of Peacemaker, okay, I wonder, what is in the water? What is always Grimace next?
I don't know. Is there going to be a purple sauce hut? Must be in the water, man.
Is there going to be a purple hut called Grimace?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I want to see it. Brits has an episode 7 prediction. In the last 10 minutes of the show, we find Boba Fett's posse in dire straits. The Pikes have suddenly pulled out some sort of secret weapon or tactic that spells doom for all the good guys. Something new and unbeatable has presented itself, such as a giant laser cannon or a Cad Bane landing with a ship full of mercenaries. Suddenly, Grogu shows up in his Mando chainmail and uses the Force in some spectacular way to crush or subdue this Pike's new tactic in one fell swoop.
Hmm.
I don't know if I even like the idea. In fact, I just want to see Boba be awesome. But why else we spend so much time with Grogu last episode if he wasn't going to be used in Boba Fett show?
Yeah, good point. I think there could be a Grogu resolution.
Yeah, and like if Grogu comes back, it's likely that either Ahsoka or Luke will come back too. And they're super powerful Jedi and could also help. And yeah, I mean, there is.
Yeah,
like,
right. Like how's Grogu going to get around? Are they just going to put him on a commercial flight, like sending a child off to see relatives in Europe or something?
Right. Like, unattended minor picks pinned on his. He can fly with young Greedo we saw last episode. But there is something cool about like a X-Wing coming in and like streaking through the sky and Luke shooting out of there with Grogu and maybe Ahsoka's with him and Boba Fett, of course, is riding his fucking Rancor. Like there could be like this some crazy go nut fan service episode that has us all, you know, creaming our space armor.
Sure.
We'll see. Justin P, I feel like I should preface this because that's the way they did Luke. Sorry, Justin, we'll get back to you. That's what they did Luke last season. Like, that came in at the 11th hour.
Yeah.
Like, we had this whole plot of the Mandalorians facing Moff Gideon, and it's desperate, and they're cut off from the bridge. The fuck is going to happen? And then Luke shows up in, like, the last 5 minutes. So they could just roll that back. I mean, it's a hit the last time.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Justin. I feel like I should preface this by saying I'm not the most lore-informed Star Wars fan. I am a fan because I was 5 when the film first came out, and like every other child my age, was sucked into Star Wars universe. That's it. You pass. Not that I resent that or anything. It's just what may appear like a revelation to me may be old hat and yesterday's news to other fans. But am I being too harsh to say I can't stand the Skywalker performance? He feels wooden and detached as if his voice does not belong to the body playing the role. Well,
I mean, literally. Yeah.
The voice feels like it could have been recorded in an entirely different time and location than went on... than when and where the scenes were filmed. I can't quite figure out how to describe it other than to say every time Skywalker spoke, his words sounded like they came from some choose-your-own-adventure game, and he could just have easily said the opposite. I'm sure he's recorded a response to either of Grogu's impending choices. By the way, is that Mark Hamill with the aging graphics being used or another actor altogether? I think we covered that, but
yeah, performance-wise, I understand why it might feel like that, because that's exactly what's happening. And maybe you're just more sensitive to that stuff than I am, but I felt it was very convincing.
I thought it was convincing, and also it's very Return of the Jedi era Luke.
Uh-huh.
Like, Luke is very much that kind of, like, emotionless, detached, you know, the way he's given his line reads, the way he's, you know, dealing with his sister. It's completely different than the impetuous farm boy we saw
totally
in episode 4. And then I think you see, like, the real transition piece in Empire. So, like, to me, it's just, you know, like the, you know, Amidala, Queen Amidalification of Luke that happened in Return of the Jedi. And I think that's obvious if you look for it in Return. Like, mm-hmm. he is that kind of very
Absolutely.
Flat affect. He's trying to be that Jedi, and he maintains that up until Vader provokes him at the end with the knowledge of his sister. Then he snaps back into scared, vengeful farm boy mode until he's brought back by the horror of his own actions. So, but it's also unfortunate that affect that you're describing does make him look like he's, you know, another voice is speaking from his body.
Sure.
Because that's also what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, Justin concludes, I see the Scooter Gang's back. I'm wondering if they aren't the result of Disney buying up Archie Comics and forcing them into the Star Wars world. Not only are they a good fit, but it feels like they belong in an entirely different universe, a very cheesy universe. Yeah, I'm not a fan of the Mod Squad. Hopefully they'll die.
Yeah.
Craig T, right off the bat, I want to say this is one of the best episodes of the live action series so far for me. It was so good to see so many threads and callbacks come together as one. I think my favorite one was to create Dragon Skull on top of the Sandcrawler. Yes, I was a huge fan of that. After last week's podcast, you did get me thinking that this would have gone down far better if they had just gone into suggested and called this show The Mandalorians. Each of the different stories being told together as one would have worked so much better. The slow parts of one story could be interwoven with another that was climaxing to give generally more fun and interesting episodes. I kept on thinking that too, this episode. Like, why didn't they interleave the Mandalorian into the first? Is it just to maintain the surprise of the Mandalorian?
What do you mean, the surprise of the Mandalorian?
No one knew the Mandalorian was going to show up, but if you start interleaving his scenes, gotcha. Like from, like maybe you give the episode one all to Boba, but then you start kind of like splicing the Mandalorian, you know, as Boba's like, we need more muscle. Like you go to the Mandalorian scene and just like just 5 minutes of him and then back to Boba for 10 minutes and 5 minutes of him, you're doing the duel with the, you know, Boba Fett. Then you go back to the Boba Fett and you just keep on and. This is very much like the Tolkien storytelling in The Lord of the Rings, where it's like, you know, once Frodo and Sam split up from the rest of the party, like you had an entire book about that. And then you get invested in that and it ends. And then like, here's an entire book of what Legolas and Aragorn and Gimli have been doing that time. And then you get back that we're back to Sam and more. I don't like that because I'm an impatient storyteller. I don't like going away from stories that long. And this feels like that. And I don't know why.
And I always like, so I will tolerate a few episodes like that, definitely,
sure.
where we cut away, we don't see the characters that you know, we saw previously. But I really enjoy when a show can take multiple storylines and weave themes throughout both of them that resonate on both sides of that story. And, you know, this eliminates the possibility for that. And I don't think that's necessarily like a show killer or anything, but yeah, it does seem like they should have just made this all one show, and it would have been, you wouldn't need episodes where you're just kind of walking around the desert for too long, right? Like that initial Book of Boba Fett episode, I thought was too much desert walking.
Yeah. Especially in a short episode.
Sure. And I got what they were putting down without the extra 10 minutes of Boba walking around the desert. So like, yeah, you could have filled that with time from the Mandalorian story or Grogu or whatever.
Especially since you, and I don't care about the consistency of runtime, but it seems like it would smooth it out too. Instead of having like a 30-minute episode, a 50-minute episode, a 45-minute episode, like just pull some of that stuff and smooth it out and give it a more consistent experience. Because there's like the first episode of Boba, like that's it. So
yeah.
But this also, like, that you need a lot more a lot more lead time to successfully interleave that stuff. It's harder. It's easier to just break it off and just go into separate units and separate, pre and post production. So might be an element of the time crunch they're under. Steve B has a little a skit for us. Luke, okay, Grogu, I want you to choose between this lightsaber, this Beskar shirt, and this frog. Grogu swallows frog. Yeah, should have given him a hard choice, Luke.
Yeah, I'm surprised. Also, the frog lifting scene. Mm-hmm. Not impressed. Like, I've seen what Luke can do.
Yeah,
maybe that impresses a youngling like Yoda, but it's not impressing me. I've seen him lift freaking X-Wings and stuff.
You know what's cooler than levitating one frog, Grogu?
Uh-huh.
Like a half dozen.
And then Luke just loads the ball into his mouth.
Yeah, I will say that I am kind of surprised that Jedi eat meat.
Yeah.
I thought that there'd be some rebukes about, like, with all this talk about light, like living force and stuff. But maybe the Jedi are next level to realize that there's really, on a force cosmic scale, no difference between eating a plant and an animal.
Right, because they all have the force.
They all have the force. They are all the life. They're all binding and all. I don't know.
Or a rock, for that matter.
But do rocks generate the force?
I mean, he talks about it, feeling it in the force.
Feeling
force and rock, sure.
Maybe Jedi just sustain themselves from the force. Like, that's the whole deal. Like, once you attain the master, you just stop eating and shitting.
Yeah. There you go.
Aaron from Buffalo. All right. The Aaron Legion grows. After this week's episode of Mandalorian Season 2.5, I feel certain that Din is going to get Grogu back. I understand why they might go this direction, but I think we should leave Baby Yoda in the past and embrace a new storyline for Mandalorian. Soft agree. I don't know forever, but I was kind of excited to see a season of The Mandalorian just doing Mandalorian shit and, like, right, hoping for a little bit more intense action, a little bit more gray morality. But nope, going to get baby Yoda back in that fucking bubble.
You might get some of it early on because, like, Baby Yoda has to connect with Mando, right? So maybe you get a couple of missions. I hope it's not just him, like, bummed out, like, flying around the galaxy and is in one. That'd be kind of boring.
It is amazing how much he's able to emote, like, sadness at not being able to see Grogu through that armor, just like, yeah, the body posture and long pauses and dialogue, and it's pretty good stuff. Capo's back. So, hey guys, another great episode sans Boba Fett, mostly, and the return of that little rapscallion Grogu. Even Uncanny Valley Luke looked pretty good, I thought. Question for you, should Grogu be talking by now? If Yoda was 900, and to say equivalent to a 60 to 80 year old human, and Grogu was 50, that would make him equivalent to like a 3 or 4 year old child, all things being equal. Most 3 to 4 year olds are talking nonstop, so I think we should be getting some Grogu monologues soon, no? That being said, what kind of voice do you think would best fit Grogu? I'm thinking something deep and soulful, like James Earl Jones or Barry White. Can't get enough, you Mando love.
I want a Chris Tucker-esque voice from Grogu.
I was actually thinking Lisa Simpson. Okay. Lisa or Bart Simpson would
be excellent. Yeah.
With like that kind of riddle speak, I could see it. Like, because he should I think something like that would suit him. And I'm with you. Now, I do think that part of his backstory is he spent a lot of this time in like cryogenic sleep. I don't know. I think they're making this shit up as they go along, too. Like, you know, sure. I think they had, it's 50 years old, but it's a Yoda baby. So who the fuck know? And also, like, he could have spent time in cryo sleep or in a back to tank being tested or all. Mm-hmm. So I think this is arrested development. Maybe he can't talk. This is part of his trauma response, too.
Sure. Could be.
So, but they need, but I think that that's something where once he starts talking and becoming a real character, it's going to fundamentally change our relationship with this thing.
Oh, yeah.
And they are soaking up the ooh, baby Yoda, ooh, woo money as long as they can.
For sure.
All right. That is it for this week's episode of the Boba Fett to Arian. We'll be back next week with the, I'm sure, going to be thrilling conclusion. Like, I'm not even joking. Like, I think that Rodriguez is going to pull out all the fucking stops, all the things on the table. the Rancor wearing Mandalorian armor, Grogu showing up in chainmail, Luke raining down death from his X-Wing, Cobb Vance looking like Raylan Givens and being awesome. Like, it's going to be an event.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be there for it. If you'd like to send us feedback, you can do so tribe@baldmove.com. We appreciate you listening. We'll see you next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.